Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is Understanding Connections and Service Integration Bus. My name is David Long, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2, the agenda. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel of experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to today's topic. Next, our panel of experts will answer the questions that they provided. Then we will open the lines for live question and answer period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. Moving on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like our panel of experts to introduce themselves for today's call. First, we have Hema Rajendran. Please go ahead, Hema.
Hi, this is Hemalata. I've been working with IBM for the past 6 years, and currently my role is level 3 support in service integration bus for the past 2.5 years.
Thank you, Hema. Next, we have Anil Madhapatla. Please go ahead, Anil.
Hi, this is Anil here. I've been working with WebSphere for the last 9 years. Currently, I am leading the service integration bus level 3 team.
Thank you, Anil. And finally, we have Mohammed Naji. Please go ahead, Mohammed.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mohammed Naji, and I've been working for IBM for the past 10 and a half years. I've been working on the messaging middleware, which is MQ, for 9 years, and for the past 3 years, I've been working on SIB as a level 2 support. So with the accordance of our host, David Long, I will go ahead and start off this presentation.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Forward, please.
Before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, please go ahead, Mohammed.
Okay. In today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange section, we will provide an overview of applications connecting towards the fourth messaging provider, which is implemented by the service integration bus, or just SIB. I will provide an overview of how applications connect to SIB. Then I will discuss the transparency concept that is unique to SIB when compared to WebSphere MQ. Hema will discuss how SIB code handles connections and best practices to establish connections to SIB. And the last but not the least, Anil will discuss how to approach connection leaks when connecting to SIB. Please note that discussions here are do apply to version 7 and all version 8 of WebSphere application server. Moving to slide 4, please. To slide 5, sorry. So question number 1, what is a connection? Moving to slide 6. In general terms, a connection is a network communication link between two programs, such as a client connecting to a server. Endpoint on each end is referred to as a socket, which is a combination of an IP address and a port number. Moving to slide 7, please. So slide 7, here it depicts a typical JMS client application that connects to a bus destination hosted by the messaging engine. The messaging engine, which is the core processor of messaging in SIB. The JMS destination can be viewed here as a proxy to the bus destination. The client first resolves the JMS resources such as client, such as connection factory and JMS destinations, or maybe an activation specification by JNDI lookup, and connects via the server's SIB endpoint. The SIB endpoint is defined by the provider endpoint property of the connection factory or activation spec. But what is provider endpoint? That's what we are going to go over in the next slide. Slide 8, please. The provider endpoint's property is used for bootstrapping. Notice its value format in the example here. The client first connects to the bootstrap server assigned by the provider endpoint's property. In doing that, the client learns where the ME is located and connects to it directly. Here, if bootstrap connection to server 1 fails, connection to server 3 is immediately tried. Since server 3 is not a member of the bus service has to be enabled for it to be able to do the ME lookup. Now moving to slide 9. sideline is question number two. How does location transparency work in SIB? Moving to slide 10. In SIB design, there are two interrelated transparency concepts that are worth knowing. These concepts are both unique to SIB when compared to the popular messaging middleware, WebSphere MQ. The first dictates where messages are physically being put or taken from. A SIB destination, when created, a logical address is created in the bus. To physically hold messages, this SIB destination gets associated to a physical address called message point that is hosted by the messaging engine. Now, the second concept is related to how the connection to a SIB destination is actually being made inside the bus. But since a bus will most likely have more than one messaging engine, if not many, in typical SIP topologies, direct connection to the messaging engine is not guaranteed by default. This is where a remote queue point, or just RQP, comes to existence. Simply put, an RQP gets created in the intermediary messaging engine, intermediary or gateway messaging engine, to manage messages flowing to and from the destination queue point. More on these two concepts in the next slide. Slide 11, please. The SIP transparency stems from the fact that user does not have to know where the SIP destination is localized. Once you supply the destination name, the workload manager, or WLM, will do the lookup. This is the default behavior and can be changed to point to the destination messaging engine. Slide number 11. Actually, slide number 12. This slide, besides showing a typical JMS API programming model on how SIP connections are made, it also depicts how the SIP destination transparency works. For simplicity, this bus has only one message, one application server member, and therefore one ME only, one messaging engine only. See how the producer on the left is taken as a reference, bus destination 1, to put messages in message queue point 1. The same relatively applies to the consumer application on the right. Moving to slide 13, now remote queue point, RQP. Since a bus will most likely have more than one messaging engine, as I said, if not many, in typical SIP topologies, direct connection to the messaging engine is not guaranteed by default. This is the default behavior. But the application will instead connect to a messaging engine where the intended destination is not localized. This intermediary, ME, will determine where the destination is localized, thanks to WLM again. As a result, a remote queue point gets created to manage messages flowing to and from the destination queue point. The following graph depicts this behavior. Moving to slide 14, please. Now, this graph depicts the extra hub, the remote queue point that is, taken by either one of the applications. For instance, on the right, message queue point 1, localized in ME2, is the intended destination for the producer. However, the producer randomly connects to ME1 instead, only to find out that message queue point or message point 1 isn't there. An RQP is created as a result. With the help of WLM, this RQP holds all the routing information to get to message queue to message point 1. The producer puts messages in the RQP whether message queue point 1 is available or not. That is whether the whether ME2 is running or not. Once available, messages will flow immediately to that queue point 1. So for the producer, destination does not have to be running. This is considered to be an advantage, with the extra hub being the cost. In contrast, the destination queue point, message point 2 of the consumer, has to be available. That is, ME1 has to be running. Otherwise, the consumer will get an error when attempting to consume messages from its destination. So the destination ME has to be running. In both scenarios, message flow issues are hard to diagnose. So moving to slide 15. Now, for simple topologies, remote operations are not an issue. But for complex topologies with many, many MEs, avoiding the extra hub by directly connecting to the ME where the destination is localized is very recommended by IBM. This can be done through reconfiguration of the connection factory's target property, which is shown on the graph here, pointing to the destination ME, changing the target type to ME's name type, and target significance to a value of required from the default value preferred. Moving to slide 16. Here is the list of pros and cons of remote operations in SIB networks. Bottom line, while remote put can be desirable in certain environments, remote get should be avoided at all costs. How does SIB handle connection? This is a question that can be answered by Hema. Over to you, Hema.
Thank you, Najib. Slide 17, please. So question 3, how does SIB handle connection? Slide 18. So in this slide, we're basically going to understand whenever there is a create connection request from the application, how does SIB handle it? So comms and TRM, as you can see in this diagram, are basically the communications and topology routing management components of SIB depicted here. So actually, they get involved during the creation of a connection. So just wanted to give an understanding of it before we go ahead. So an application issues create connection request by invoking the create connection API and the connection factory. So the first time you establish a connection from the client to the messaging engine, the first thing we do is a handshake. So during the handshake, the level of the client and the level of the messaging engine would be communicated so that they basically agree upon how they can communicate from then on. So when the handshake occurs, there is a lot of information that is first sent from the client to the server, and then the server responds back with an adjusted version so that the client and the server can then on communicate on the same version. So once the handshake is successful, the TRM would then find the specified messaging engine if the provider endpoints were already configured in the application. So if the provider endpoints were not configured in the application, then the TRM would go ahead and find a suitable messaging engine that is available to connect to, and then return the connection details back to the client so that the client can then go ahead and establish a connection with the messaging engine. SIB multiplexes connections. So first, let's understand what is multiplexing. So multiplexing is basically a process where multiple data streams are merged into a single resource. The aim here is to minimize the use of an expensive resource. TCP/IP connection is an expensive resource, and if every client creates a connection, if every client connection to a messaging engine causes a TCP/IP connection, it is going to create a lot of overhead. So it would be better if the TCP/IP connection was shared across multiple clients whenever it is applicable. So the TCP/IP connection is the one that will be multiplexed. So as part of this multiplexing, every client will be associated with a conversation, and the conversation would in turn be associated with a physical connection. You can have more than one conversation over the same physical connection. As you can see in this diagram, there are about five conversations over the same physical connection. So whenever you create a connection to the messaging engine, SIB would first establish to see if there is an existing connection already or not. If there is an existing connection, then it would go ahead and create a new conversation and associate it with the existing connection. When there are many conversations over the same physical connection, a new connection would be created. Next slide, slide 19. This is a continuation of the multiplexing concept. As you can see here, each session would be associated with a conversation, and there are three conversations in this diagram. So all these three conversations representing three different requests would be happening simultaneously on multiple threads, but eventually all of those three conversations would make use of the same physical connection and hence the same underlying TCP/IP socket. Similarly, on the receiving side, there is a mirror image of this where all the conversations would arrive on the same physical connection and they would be identified by the comms component of SIB and the request would be processed accordingly. Next slide, slide number 20. Question 4, what are the best practices for using connections? Next slide, slide number 21. Okay. In this slide, we are going to talk about some of the best practices from our observations from the customers, basically. So we have seen many PMRs where they report connection leaks, and we have seen that many of the cases, the cause for the connection leak was because they in the client application, they were not closing the connections whenever they were creating them. So the most important thing is to ensure that the connections are closed whenever they are created. So connections can be either shareable connections or unshareable connections. So shareable connections should always be used in the get, use, close pattern. So we have seen certain cases in the customers where they were using shareable connections, which led to certain exceptions in the communications layer. So the following was the pattern that they were using. They used to get a connection, then begin a transaction, do work on the connection, and then commit the transaction, and then again begin work on the same connection. This kind of pattern of usage of connections is not recommended for shareable connections because it will lead to exceptions and you will not be getting the expected behavior. And customers should always ensure that whenever they are writing the client application, the connections and session objects should never be cached. And as the JMS spec dictates, the customers should also keep in mind when they are writing their application that the session objects should not be used simultaneously by more than one thread. Moving on, slide number 22. I'll pass it to Anil for answering.
Hi. Question number 5, how do we approach a connection leak? Moving on to slide 23. So by standard definition of connection leak, essentially what we mean is that a connection that has been obtained to a particular resource and has been used and not been returned or closed, which essentially leads to a point that you are actually piling up these connections on the heap and the resources at the network level also start piling up. The key aspect of understanding why a connection leak is happening and how do we address is understanding various aspects that are related to a connection and gaining a deeper understanding at what level are we having these connections leak starting from. Moving over to slide 24. Yeah. Most of the times what we have observed is that a badly written application code is a main root cause for the connection leak. Essentially, a lot of times we observe that in applications within the scope of the connection usage, the connections are created but the connections are not necessarily closed. And the most famous place where people forget to close connections is in case of an exception. For instance, when you do a try block and there is a problem with it and you encounter an exception, within the cache block, if you don't close the connection that has been obtained, then the connection would be left over in the heap and eventually the socket and the network level resources also start leaking. The best approach for dealing with connections is always to deal with them in the finally block and to make sure that the connection is always closed in the finally block correctly. Moving on to slide 25. There are two, as Hema explained, there is a slight difference with the way SIB works with connections. And as Naji has pointed out, we have two things. One is conversation and another is a connection. Conversation is a logical entity that is pinned over a connection, and connection is the one which would actually represent the physical socket on the machine. So in SIB, because of these two being two separate entities, one leak or rather leak at one point would always lead to leaking at the other level. And the end result is always observed at the network layer where you can see too many sockets piling up. In the next slides, we would try to understand how we go about finding it. But the other important aspect is understanding the relation between shared and unshared connections, and how are these, how do these work inside, say. So essentially, shared and unshared connections are something that can be defined over the during the application deployment. And in shared connections, what happens is within the same local transaction, the same connection object is being reused, or rather the J2C connection pool would return the same connection object. Whereas in an unshared connections, you will be returned with an altogether different aspect. So depending on these two scenarios, the behavior would be very different when you close or when you do not close a connection appropriately. But eventually, in both the cases, we would end up with a leak if the connections are not closed correctly. And one particular thing with shared connections is that you would not actually see the sockets on the network layer piling up, but you would definitely see an increased heap utilization because of the piling up of these connections. We would now go ahead and understand how do you actually determine a leak or how do you ascertain a leak. Slide 26, please. The basic and the most rudimentary way of figuring out there is a connection leak is to observe the netstat output. Either on the client or on the messaging engine or on the server which is hosting the messaging engine, if you run a netstat command and you observe the number of sockets that are being used by the messaging engine, and you observe it over a period of time, and if they are constantly increasing, then there is an indication that the connection usage has been increasing. But how do we ascertain whether it's a leak or not is typically very dependent on the application usage pattern. But one constant thing is that whether a connection once opened, or rather an IP socket port and an IP socket port, if you see it to be present in your netstat output all the time, then it's a definite indicator that the connections are not getting closed correctly. And after that, the next important thing is a heap dump. When you look at a heap dump, or if you generate a heap dump and you look into it for connection or conversation objects, and if these objects are increasing in heap over a period of time, then that is also an indicator that there is something wrong in the way the connections are being used by the environment. Moving over to slide 27. If any of these two give you an indicator that there is an increased usage of connections over a period of time and it does not come down, then the best thing to observe or the best thing to go about is to do a code walkthrough and understand what exactly is happening with the connections and how are these connections being dealt by the applications, and ensure that all the connections that have been opened are closed either infinitely or when you are done using the connections. And even after that, if you see there are problems, then engaging the support team is the right approach. Slide 28, please. The following are some of the links that actually explain a lot more in detail about what we have discussed today, and would give you more insights into how do these connections work, and shareable, non-shareable connections, and the J2C pool, and how do you manage your pool better, and all these details are available in these links. Passing on over to David.
I'd like to thank our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this time, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
We do have a question coming through from Asisha's line. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi, this is Asha.
Hi, Asha.
Yeah. So you have, I saw the tech note from shareable versus unshared connection. Is there a criteria to decide, you know, when to use shared connection versus when to use unshared?
Okay. So repeating Asha's question, basically Asha wants to understand what is the criteria based on which you would want to juggle between a shared connection or an unshared connection. Asha, it is typical, shared connections and unshared connections are particularly useful when you are dealing with multiple connection requests within a same transaction domain. Within a same transaction domain, if you have a requirement that you would actually go ahead and ask for connection at multiple instances of time, then a better approach is to go for a shared connection, because the same object would be reused again and again over the period of time. Whereas in an unshared connection, what happens is every time you request for a connection, a new connection object is returned to you.
But so there's more overhead in unshared, but at the same time, there's a possibility that there is no deadlocks or anything?
Deadlocks and all the related issues around locking and deadlocking would not come into picture at this point of time, because that piece of code is pretty much ironed out, and that code is very stable. And the way we decide whether a new connection has to be written or an existing connection that was already in use can be reused is something that is already ironed out, and there is a logic which is fair enough to figure that out. Only thing that it helps you with is the is optimizing the resource utilization that you have at any point of time.
Right. Okay.
Thank you. We do have a couple of questions in the group chat. The first one was sent just to the Q&A group, so you won't be seeing this. But the question is, what are the best practices to monitor the availability and performance of SIB members? Are there any recommended PMI matrices that can be viewed by Tivoli or Wiley-like software?
Okay, so the person who posted the question, I think they were more intending to ask about availability of a SIB messaging engine. So the availability of SIB messaging engine or the place where SIB messaging engine is running could be very easily figured out by a simple wsadmin command, which can actually print out where or which server is actually hosting the messaging engine. Regarding the performance of it, performance is very typical to the application and its usage scenario. So if you would want to define by the number of messages that are being produced and the number of messages that are being consumed by an application, then criteria like how long does the application take to commit a transaction and how long does the application take to process a message that has been delivered to it successfully and all would come into picture. But having said that, there are a huge set of statistics that are provided by SIB and are available in PMI and in the WebSphere administrative console itself. You can use you can enable these statistics and monitor these statistics using Tivoli Performance Viewer.
Okay, and then the follow-up to that, is this for both SIB members and connections?
Okay, so to monitor connections, the easiest and the simplest way is to go by a netstat. And if you can grep out the port on which the messaging engine is running, then that's the simplest way to look at it. And beyond that, again, as I was saying, there are a huge number of PMI statistics that SIB reports, and enabling those statistics and monitoring with them would give you a better picture of how are the connections being used and how is the system faring with respect to connections at any given point of time.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question. Does the messaging engine run on the same JVM as the application server?
Yes. Messaging engine is an integral part of the application server. However, there are topologies that can be employed to make sure that there are application servers which are dedicated to run messaging engines and application servers which can host the applications. But that is to do with topology. But as such, messaging engine cannot be separated from an application server.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, also sent to the Q&A group. In some cases, applications do not pick up response messages that come from backend to SIP. A restart of ME cluster helps to fix this problem, but how to troubleshoot this?
The response messages that are arriving onto the queues, if they are not being picked up, then it is essentially to do with the application that is interested in the response messages running or not. The most easiest way is to find out whether the client who is interested in consuming the response messages, is it running at that point of time, is the basic way to start with.
Okay, thank you. And the next question. In the cluster of two servers, Sybus, JMSQs, JMS Connection Factory, and Destinations are created. When we stop JVM1, we are seeing errors in JVM2, rollback on exception, listener exception.
Right. So typically, this is indicating that the messaging engine is primarily running on message JVM1. Otherwise, these rollback exceptions are a little rare to observe unless there is a transaction that is going on with a resource that is available on JVM1.
Okay. Thank you. Then the next question: if messaging engine uses file store, will unclosed connections eventually create issues with file locks?
No, the connections are not to do with the file locks. The unclosed connections would create a problem in connections that are being used to connect to the messaging engine. the connections are always between the client and the messaging engine. Between the messaging engine and its backend data store or file store is something which is dealt by the messaging internally, and it has got nothing to do with the customer application.
Okay, thank you. And then another question. Is there any way to notify the admin if the connection is lost to the messaging engine in the form of email?
Not unless you use tools like ITCAM, where you can configure to listen to some exceptions, and you can send out a notification or an email to the administrator.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for your participation in the live Q&A period. At this time, I would like to advance to slide 31 and pass the presentation over to Anil for a summary of today's presentation.
So to summarize the way connections are behaved, or rather connections are used within SIB, SIB essentially deals with connections by optimizing the resource utilization by following multiplexing. Multiplexing essentially means that the same physical connection will be used by multiple virtualized connections, so that at any given point of time we make an optimal usage of the resource. To indicate how to connect to a messaging engine, to connect to a messaging engine, we follow things like comms and we use components like comms, DRM, and WLM, which based on predetermined statistics like either a provider endpoint or based on the best routing mechanism, will find an appropriate messaging engine and would help applications to connect to the messaging engine of their interest. And when connecting to a messaging engine, SIB provides a unique functionality called as location transparency. By a mixed concept of virtualizing a destination and optimally connecting to a desired messaging engine automatically, the SIB provides the location transparency, wherein the application never needs to really bother on which particular server or which particular location is the messaging engine running. Instead, could directly request for a connection and could be assured that it would be correctly connected to an appropriate messaging engine. With location transparency, there are two additional features like remote put and remote get, which would ensure that irrespective of the location where the application has connected, the messages can be fished out from the location where the message lies, or when the application puts a message, the message can be transferred appropriately to the place where the destination is localized. That's to do with how do we connect to the messaging engine. So after that, we were looking at how do you actually use the connections and the best way or the best patterns to use connections, like shared connections, unshared connections, and how do you close the connections appropriately and how do you deal with them in the right approach. After that, we were looking at the troubleshooting mechanisms based on which you can figure out a connection leak, like using netstat and heap dumps to analyze and observe whether the system is behaving well or if there is a plausible problem in the way the connections are being used.
Thank you, Anil, for the great summary. At this time, we will conclude the Ask the Expert session. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and a sincere thank you to our panel of experts for presenting today.